Chapter 2. June 18, Squire Hawkins sat upon the pyramid of large blocks, called the tile, in front of his house, contemplating the morning. The locality was Abbottstown, East Tennessee. You would not know that Abbottstown stood on the top of a mountain, for there was nothing about the landscape to indicate it, but it did. A mountain that stretched abroad over whole counties, and rose very gradually. The district was called the Knobs of East Tennessee, and had a reputation like Nazareth, as far as turning out any good thing was concerned. The squire's house was a double log cabin, in a state of decay. Two or three gaunt hounds lay asleep about the threshold, and lifted their heads sadly, whenever Mrs. Hawkins or the children stepped in, and out over their bodies. Rubbish was scattered about the grassless yard. A bench stood near the door with a tin wash basin on it, and a pail of water and a gourd. A cat had begun to drink from the pail, but the exertion was overtaxing her energies, and as he had stopped to rest. There was an ash hopper by the fence, and an iron pot, for soft soap boiling, near it. This dwelling constituted 1/15 of Abbottstown. The other 14 houses were scattered about among the tall pine trees, and among the cornfields in such a way, that a man might stand in the midst of the city, and not know, but that he was in the country, if he only depended on his eyes for information. Squire Hawkins got his title from being postmaster of Abbottstown, not that the title properly belonged to the office, but because in those regions the chief citizens always must have titles of some sort, and so the usual courtesy had been extended to Hawkins. The mail was monthly, and sometimes amounted to as much as 3 or 4 letters at a single delivery. Even a rush like this did not fill up the postmaster's whole month, though, and therefore he kept store in the intervals. The squire was contemplating the morning. It was balmy and tranquil, the vagrant breezes were laden with the odor of flowers, the murmur of bees was in the air, there was everywhere that suggestion of repose, that summer woodlands bring to the senses, and the vague, pleasurable melancholy that such a time and such surroundings inspire. Presently the United States mail arrived, on horseback. There was but one letter, and it was for the postmaster. The long-legged youth who carried the mail tarried an hour to talk, for there was no hurry, and in a little while the male population of the village had assembled to help. As a general thing, they were dressed in homespun jeans, blue or yellow, here were no other varieties of it. All wore one suspender and sometimes two yarn ones knitted at home, some wore vests, but few wore coats. Such coats and vests as did appear, however, were rather picturesque than otherwise, for they were made of tolerably fanciful patterns of calico, a fashion which prevails there to this day among those of the community who have tastes above the common level, and are able to afford style. Every individual arrived with his hands in his pockets. A hand came out occasionally for a purpose, but it always went back again after service, and if it was the head that was served, just the cant, that the dilapidated straw hat got by being uplifted and rooted under, was retained until the next call altered the inclination. Many hats were present, but none were erect, and no two were canted just alike. We are speaking impartially of men, youths and boys. And we are also speaking of these three estates, when we say that every individual was either chewing natural leaf tobacco prepared on his own premises, or smoking the same in a corn cob pipe. Few of the men wore whiskers. None wore mustaches. Some had a thick jungle of hair under the chin, and hiding the throat the only pattern recognized there as being the correct thing in whiskers. But no part of any individual's face had seen a razor for a week. These neighbors stood a few moments looking at the mail carrier reflectively while he talked, but fatigue soon began to show itself, and one after another they climbed up, and occupied the top rail of the fence, hump-shouldered and grave, like a company of buzzards assembled for supper and listening for the death rattle. Old Damrell said, "Thaw ain't no news about the judge. It ain't likely. Can't tell for sartin," Some thinks he's going to belong to Oracle, and some thinks he ain't. Russ mostly he totally hanks he might get to Obst tomorrow or next day he reckoned. Well, I wish I knowed. I got a prime so and pigs in the coat house, and I ain't got no place for to put 'em. If the judges ain't going to hold coat, I got to roust them out, I reckon. But tomorrow'll do, I spect. The speaker bunched his thick lips together like the stem end of a tomato, and shot a bumblebee dead, that had lit on a weed 7 feet away. One after another the several chewers expressed a charge of tobacco juice, and delivered it at the deceased with steady, aim and faultless accuracy. What's a stirrin', down bout the forks? Continued old Damrel. Well, I dunno, scasely. Ole, Drake Higgins he's been down to Shelby losses week. Tuck his crap down, couldn't get shed o' the most of it. It wasn't no time for to sell, he say, so he fotch it back a gin, lowin' to wait till fall. Talks about goin' to Moser I lots of em's talkin', that dash away down thar, Ole Higgins say. Can't make a livin' here no mo', sich times as these. S.I. Higgins he's been over to Kent again married a high-toned gal thar, out in the fust families, and he's come back to the Forks with just a hell's mint o' whoop jamboree notions, folks says. He's tuck and fixed up the Olay house like they does in Kentuck, he say, and thaw's been folks come clear from Turpentine for to see it. He's tuck and gommed it all over on the inside with plasterin'. What's plasterin'? I dunno. It's what he calls it. Ole Ma'am Higgins, she told me. She say she wasn't going to hang out in no sitch a dern hole like a hog. Says it's mud, or some sitch kind o' nastiness, that sticks on and covers up everything. Plasterin', S.I. calls it. This marvel was discussed at considerable length, and almost with animation. But presently there was a dogfight over in the neighborhood of the blacksmith shop, and the visitors slid off their perch like so many turtles, and strode to the battlefield with an interest bordering on eagerness. The squire remained, and read his letter. Then he sighed, and sat long in meditation. At intervals he said, Missouri! Missouri! Well, 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 everything is so uncertain. At last he said, I believe I'll do it. A man will just rot, here. My house, my yard, everything around me, in fact, shows that I am becoming one of these cattle and I used to be thrifty in other times. He was not more than 35, but he had a worn look that made him seem older. He left the stile, entered that part of his house which was the store, traded a quart of thick molasses for a coonskin and a cake of beeswax, to an old dame in linsey-woolsey, put his letter away, and went into the kitchen. His wife was there, constructing some dried apple pies. A slovenly urchin of 10 was dreaming over a rude weather vane of his own contriving. His small sister, close upon 4 years of age, was sopping cornbread in some gravy left in the bottom of a frying pan and trying hard not to sop over a finger mark that divided the pan through the middle, for the other side belonged to the brother, whose musings made him forget his stomach for the moment. A Negro woman was busy cooking at a vast fireplace. Shiftlessness and poverty reigned in the place. Nancy, I've made up my mind. The world is done with me, and perhaps I ought to be done with it. But no matter, I can wait. I am going to Missouri. I won't stay in this dead country and decay with it. I've had it on my mind sometime. I'm going to sell out here for whatever I can get, and buy a wagon and team, and put you and the children in it and start. Anywhere that suits you, suits me, sigh. And the children can't be any worse off in Miss Sourey than they are here, I reckon. Motioning his wife to a private conference in their own room, Hawkins said, colon, no, they'll be better off. I've looked out for them, Nancy, and his face lighted. Oh, you see these papers? Well, they are evidence that I have taken up 75,000 acres of land in this county. Dash think what an enormous fortune it will be someday. Why, Nancy, enormous don't express it the words too tame. I tell your Nancy, for goodness sake, S.I., wait, Nancy, wait, let me finish. I've been secretly bailing and fuming with this grand inspiration for weeks, and I must talk or I'll burst. I haven't whispered to a soul, not a word, have had my countenance under lock and key, for fear it might drop something that would tell even these animals here how to discern the gold mine that's glaring under their noses. Now all that is necessary to hold this land, and keep it in the family is to pay the trifling taxes on it yearly, $5 or $10. The whole tract would not sell for over a third of a cent an acre now, but someday people will be glad to get it for $20, $50, $100 an acre. What should you say to? Here he dropped his voice to a whisper, and looked anxiously around to see that there were no eavesdroppers. $1,000 an acre. Well, you may open your eyes and stare, but it's so. You and I may not see the day, but they'll see it. Mind, I tell you, they'll see it. Nancy, you've heard of steamboats, and maybe you believed in them, of course you did. You've heard these cattle here scoff at them, and call them lies and humbugs, but they're not lies and humbugs, they're a reality, and they're going to be a more wonderful thing someday than they are now. They're going to make a revolution in this world's affairs that will make men dizzy to contemplate. I've been watching, while some people slept, and I know what's coming. Even you and I will see the day that steamboats will come up that little Turkey River to within 20 miles of this land of ours, and in high water they'll come right to it. And this is not all, Nancy, it isn't even half. There's a bigger wonder, the railroad. These worms here have never even heard of it, and when they do, they'll not believe in it. But it's another fact. Coaches that fly over the ground 20 miles an hour, heavens and earth, think of that, Nancy. 20 miles an hour. It makes a man's brain whirl. Someday, when you and I are in our graves, there'll be a railroad stretching hundreds of miles all the way down from the cities of the northern states to New Orleans, and it's got to run within 30 miles of this land, maybe even touch a corner of it. Well, do you know, they've quit burning wood in some places in the eastern states? And what do you suppose they burn? Coal. He bent over and whispered again. Here's worlds of it on this land. You know that black stuff that crops out of the bank of the branch? Well, that's it. You've taken it for rocks, so has everybody here, and they've built little dams and such things with it. One man was going to build a chimney out of it. Nancy, I expect I turned as white as a sheet. Why, it might have caught fire and told everything. I showed him it was too crumbly. Then he was going to build it of copper ore, splendid yellow 40% ore. There's fortunes upon fortunes of copper ore on our land. It scared me to death, the idea of this fool starting a smelting furnace in his house without knowing it, and getting his dull eyes opened. And then he was going to build it of iron ore. There's mountains of iron ore here, Nancy, whole mountains of it. I wouldn't take any chances. I just stuck by him, I haunted him, I never let him alone till he built it of mud, and sticks like all the rest of the chimneys in this dismal country. Pine forests, wheat land, corn land, iron, copper, coal, wait till the railroads come, and the steamboats. We'll never see the day, Nancy, never in the world, dash never, 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 child. We've got to drag along, and eat crusts in toil and poverty, all hopeless and forlorn, but they'll ride in coaches, Nancy. They'll live like the princes of the earth. They'll be courted and worshipped. Their names will be known from ocean to ocean. Ah, well, a dash day. Will they ever come back here, on the railroad and the steamboat, and say, this one little spot shall not be touched, this hovel shall be sacred, for here our father and our mother suffered for us, thought for us, laid the foundations of our future as solid as the hills. Apostrophe, you are a great, good, noble soul, S.I. Hawkins, and I am an honored woman, to be the wife of such a man, and the tears stood in her eyes when she said it. He will go to Missouri. You are out of your place, here, among these groping dumb creatures. We will find a higher place, where you can walk with your own kind, and be understood when you speak, not stared at, as if you were talking some foreign tongue. I would go anywhere, anywhere in the wide world with you. I would rather my body would starve and die than your mind should hunger, and wither away in this lonely land. Spoken like yourself, my child. But we'll not starve, Nancy. Far from it. I have a letter from Beriah Sellers just came this day. A letter that I'll read you a line from it. He flew out of the room. A shadow blurred the sunlight in Nancy's face. There was uneasiness in it, and disappointment. A procession of disturbing thoughts began to troop through her mind. Saying nothing aloud, she sat with her hands in her lap. Now and then she clasped them, then unclasped them, then tapped the ends of the fingers together. Sighed, nodded, smiled, occasionally paused, shook her head. This pantomime was the elocutionary expression of an unspoken soliloquy which had something of this shape. I was afraid of it. Trying to make our fortune in Virginia, Beriah Sellers nearly ruined us, and we had to settle in Kentucky and start over again. Trying to make our fortune in Kentucky, he crippled us again, and we had to move here. Trying to make our fortune here, he brought us clear down to the ground, nearly. He's an honest soul, and means the very best in the world, but I'm afraid he's too flighty. He has splendid ideas, and he'll divide his chances with his friends with a free hand, the good generous soul, but something does seem to always interfere and spoil everything. I never did think he was right well balanced. But I don't blame my husband, for I do think that, when that man gets his head full of a new notion, he can out-talk a machine. He'll make anybody believe in that notion that'll listen to him 10 minutes. Why, I do believe he would make a deaf and dumb man believe in it, and get beside himself, if you only set him where he could see his eyes tally and watch his hands explain. What a head he has got! When he got up that idea there in Virginia of buying up whole loads of Negroes in Delaware and Virginia and Tennessee, very quiet, having papers drawn, two of them delivered at a place in Alabama, and take them, and pay for them, away yonder at a certain in time, and then in the meantime get a law made stopping everybody from selling Negroes to the South after a certain day. It was somehow that way, mercy, how the man would have made money. Negroes would have gone up to 4 prices. But after he'd spent money and worked hard, and traveled hard, and had heaps of Negroes all contracted for, and everything going along just right, he couldn't get the laws passed, and down the whole thing tumbled. And there in Kentucky, when he raked up that old numbskull that had been inventing away at a perpetual motion machine for 22 years, and Beriah Sellers saw at a glance where just one more little cogwheel would settle the business, why, I could see it as plain as day, when he came in wild at midnight, and hammered us out of bed, and told the whole thing in a whisper with the doors bolted, and the candle in an empty barrel. Oceans of money in it, anybody could see that. But it did cost a deal to buy the old numbskull out, and then when they put the new cogwheel in, they'd overlooked something somewhere, and it wasn't any use, the troublesome thing wouldn't go. That notion he got up here did look as handy as anything in the world. And how him and S.I. did sit up nights working at it with the curtains down and me watching to see if any neighbors were about. The man did honestly believe there was a fortune in that black gummy oil that stews out of the bank S.I. says is coal, and he refined it himself till it was like water, nearly, and it did burn, there's no two ways about that, and I reckon he'd have been all right in Cincinnati with his lamp that he got made, that time he got a house full of rich speculators. To see him exhibit only in the middle of his speech it let go, and almost blew the heads off the whole crowd. I haven't got over grieving for the money that cost yet. I am sorry enough Beriah Sellers is in Missouri now, but I was glad when he went. I wonder what his letter says. But of course it's cheerful. He's never downhearted, never had any trouble in his life, didn't know it if he had. It's always sunrise with that man, and fine and blazing, at that never gets noon, though leaves off and rises again. Nobody can help liking the creature. He means so well, but I do dread to come across him again. He's bound to set us all crazy, of course. Well, there goes old Widow Hopkins. It always takes her a week to buy a spool of thread and trade a hank of yarn. Maybe yes, I can come with the letter now. And he did. Widow Hopkins kept me. I haven't any patience with such tedious people. Now listen, Nancy, just listen at this. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.